This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Trey Wingo on Wingo Wednesday. Hello, Trey.
Michael, it is great to hear you, and I just was dying laughing because remember, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend sugarless gum to their patients who chew gum. So, well done on your part to bring that up.
Thank you very, very much. All right, so what do you make of two conferences saying there's not going to be football? If there is, it's going to be in the spring. And the other three Big Five conferences saying, yeah, we're going to go with it. Well, I mean, what do you make of that? Is there anything to make of it? Is there any sense to make of it?
Well, I guess my first thought would be, I think the way I feel about the conferences that are planning to go, and I spoke to a couple of Big 12 ADs yesterday, I think the conference that is planning to go, especially with the Big 12, is planning to go. And I think that that is still the way you have to look at it, whether it's the SEC, the ACC. I think the All-America Conference also said they're planning to go. That just means they're giving themselves a little more time, because one of the things one of the athletic directors said to me yesterday was, look, why do we feel like we have to make a decision right now? Why do we feel like we need to come to this conclusion at this moment? We don't have to. We still have more time. And then the Big 12 came out and announced that they're going to not even start conference play till the 26th of September, which is, you know, another 6 or 7 weeks. And then I don't know if you noticed when they released all those schedules, a lot of those first dates were September 12th, TBD. TBD is a very popular opponent right now, as we're all trying to figure out who they're going to play. So while I hear it's frustrating, because you're right, you can't get a consensus on anything. And that, in talking to another athletic director in the Big 12 yesterday, he's like, I have a doctor from the Mayo Clinic that's telling me he would let his sons play, even though we know that COVID-19 does affect tissue in the heart, much in the same way influenza can affect tissue in the heart. And then you'll talk to another doctor, and they would say, yeah, that's true, but we still don't know about what we're calling this novel coronavirus to know for sure whether or not there are any real long-term effects. So that's the frustrating part. To me, Michael and Don and Peter, that was where I think the deciding line came down for the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, is that we can't get a consensus on information, so how can we say it's okay to play?
It's just so frustrating to me, the bravado, right? You hear Jerry Jones today say, we're going to play our schedule, and we're going to play in front of fans. Wait a minute. There's question marks on being able to play, and already he's jumped out to actually having fans in the building. And when are we going to realize as a country that we can't just punch the coronavirus in the face and move on? Like, when are we going to learn
to
respect our
opponent?
Damn it,
Don, what are you, a commie? You can't punch this virus right in its face?
Well, it's like that, like you talked about, that sheriff from Florida. I read that story, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, literally, Florida is racked with more COVID cases on a daily basis right now than any other state. And this guy is doing that. Look, you can say whatever you want, right? But I can point to every single place where they have put strict mask wearing and social distancing policies in place. And you know what? They've crushed it. So you can pretend like that's not a real thing, but you know what? You just be pretending.
What's the comp, Trey? I'm trying to come up with the comparison as to people who want to open everything but also don't want to wear masks. It's like,
well, I mean, Peter, I put it this way, right? For years, you would walk into a restaurant and you would see a sign that says, no shirt, no shoes. Mm-hmm. No service.
That's right.
Or dice.
Did you ever hear someone scream, but I have rights, about those signs?
It's a great
point. That's the way they would sound
if they did.
That is correct.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's it. So this is what we call selective outrage, right? And I'm not here for selective outrage. Either you have to be the most extreme libertarian of all time, and if you are, good for you, God bless you, and you want nothing. And if that's your position, fine. But don't tell me you're okay with no shirts, right, no shoes, no service, and then suddenly a mask is this breach of massive civil liberties.
You're okay with seatbelts too, but you
yeah, wear and, masks. Yeah, and new security at an airport after 9/11.
But I kind of explain the radicalism away by the politics, because people get caught up in the politics. But people that I don't think are trying to be political, like Rob Manfred saying, you know, that he's What was the phrasing that he used?
I'm not a coward. I'm not going to cower. I'm no quitter
when it came to possibly postponing the season. Yeah. Like, I don't think he's saying that political views. It's still that American bravado of we will overcome, we'll persevere. And I'm proud of that as an American. But sometimes we just have to have a little bit more respect for something we can't see and we're still trying to figure out. So I just don't understand the whole, even the NFL, we're going to push forward, we're going to man up, and we're going to figure this thing out. I don't think we're in a position to do that.
I don't disagree with you. And, you know, look, Rob tends to get himself in trouble sometimes when he talks. And the idea I'm not a quitter, no one's suggesting if you shut something down for the right reasons that you're quitting, it suggests that you've gone through all the evidence and you're doing the most prudent thing. And I'm not saying they should at this point. I want to be clear about that. But to say, that's like a buddy of mine. My old friend Merrill Hodge used to tell me this story about a friend of his who they had a real concern about his, he had a drinking problem. So they're like, you know, listen, we think you might have a drinking problem. We want you to go to AA. And his response was, AA? Hell, I'm no quitter. I'm going to see this thing through.
That's
not always the appropriate response, you know?
Exactly. And this is the exact place. Now, Trey, what are you enjoying the most so far? And do you think it's time? I think we might have to change the way we talk about Damian Lillard. I think we all know he's great.
Yeah.
But is it time to sort of change that conversation to him, from him going from like tier 1A to just tier 1?
Yeah, I think he's superstar status right now. And you know what I like about him is that he wants the challenge. Like the way he talked after that 61-point game, put some respect on my bleeping name. I mean, that's the kind of superstar DNA we all want, right? That's the thing. You go out there and do it, and not only do you do it, but you tell people that you did it, and you remind them that you're probably going to do it again.
Well, and the fact that it was all fueled, he's now had back-to-back games over 50 since he missed the two free throws over the weekend that cost him the game. So
correct.
It's just, this is, it's, he's got a real, like, Jordan Bird 80s-esque sort of scoring bravado that you don't see a lot.
He's got an edge, and he uses that edge. You know, that was the one thing that came out of the Jordan documentary, which we all called The Last Dance, but it was the Michael Jordan documentary, is that you saw the edge that sometimes went way too far, but it's what he felt like he needed. And I feel like Damian's getting that edge as well.
All right, so what's more impressive to you, what the Suns have done or what the Nets have done with a depleted team?
You know, it's interesting, right? Because I think there were hopes for the Nets and that they're doing well with a depleted team. But there was nobody that had any expectations for the Suns. And, you know, that's the weird thing about what's going on with the bubble. There is no home court advantage. It's all sort of a neutral thing. And the idea that this team, which was just sort of dead and buried and was just sort of an invite just to, you know, like, you know, they call camp bodies back in the day in the NFL. Yeah, we sure, come on, we'll hit on you for 3 weeks and then we'll cut you. I think everybody sort of felt that way about the Suns, and lo and behold, look what they're doing in a very interesting new environment. I thought it was so cool what the team did the other night, and you saw the reaction to it when all their relatives got to announce the lineup.
That was cool.
In the bubble on the video. That was really, really cool, and I thought it was a very, very innovative thing. So on that level, I'd have to say I'd thank the Suns because there was no expectation for them at all.
How are you going to read all this, though, when it's all said and done? Because there's so many teams that are using these games as exhibition. And then there's some teams like Portland that desperately need these games to try to get in. So is it kind of difficult to prognosticate going forward based on what you've seen in these eight games because it's such a mishmash of interest between teams?
Yes, and I think at the end of the day, the teams that were good in March are probably going to be the teams that will be fighting for it when it's all said and done. Because, you know, the Lakers clinched the number one seed, and I don't think they've really even thought about doing much since then. I just think a lot of the teams that have real expectations, and we talked about this with Jeff Van Gundy a couple of weeks ago, will use these eight regular season games as essentially a preseason and just sort of tune up because they know where they are. They know what they need to be. And they're just kind of, I don't say going through the motions because that would almost be a little too light, but I think they're just doing what they feel necessary to prepare themselves for what they know is coming.
Do you believe that Jerry Jones' team will play in front of fans in Texas? Because you mentioned Florida. Texas is also in pretty bad shape. Their governor still will not open up the economy because things are in such bad shape there. How does he assume, no matter how great the airflow is at AT&T Stadium, to have fans in those seats?
Yeah, I do love that argument, by the way. I've heard that a couple of times. Well, our airflow is great. Well, what does that mean? I mean, okay, cool. So you get in with great airflow, and then you have 10 people with COVID that somehow better in the airflow, and the airflow is not going to float around everybody else. I mean, I respect your freak science there, but I don't think that's quite how that works. Look, Jerry says a lot of things, right? He said at one point that nobody on his team would ever kneel for the anthem a few years ago, and I guarantee you that's going to change. And he said in 2016, I believe, there was no conclusive evidence between football and CTE. We all know that there's probably a very causal link there. So Jerry says a lot of things, you know, and I think he says a lot of things for business reasons. He at the end of the day, he can say what he wants. It ain't his decision, right?
Right.
So he can say, that's like saying, I want this as a player. Well, guess what? You don't get to make that choice more often than not, unless you're Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes. So, it's cool that Jerry says that, but at the end of the day, Jerry has no final decision on it, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Kind of a rare situation in the NHL last night. A game goes five overtimes and ends before 9:30.
Oh, my God. That was exhausting, yeah.
Were you caught up in it? Is that something that kind of fascinates you when you see something go that long?
Look, overtime hockey, I mean, overtime playoff hockey is the greatest thing there is. I mean, people asked me once, I had for this book, name the five greatest sporting events you've ever been to. And one of the top three was the three overtime game between the Blues and the Red Wings at the Joe, where Steve Yzerman put it over John Casey's shoulder, who was filling in for the injured Grant Fuhr. And that was the end of the Wayne Gretzky era in St. Louis and all that kind of stuff. But I was at that game, and it was electric. There is nothing better than an overtime hockey game because it can go at any time. Like, you can go five periods or it can take 2 minutes, you know, and that's what makes it interesting, and it's so draining. So, I've said it a million times. Don, you know what a football guy I am. There is nothing harder to win in sports than the Stanley Cup, and that's because of overtime playoffs.
I'm curious, Trey, and this is just out of nowhere. So when you're sitting in your expansive mansion and you might have on the YES Network and you're listening, watching a Yankee game, do you turn to whoever's sitting with you and go, that's my guy doing the play-by-play? Do you ever say that?
That's my guy Claymation. He's good at his job.
Peter, have you ever heard a question like that in your life?
No,
you've been
strange.
In radio forever.
It came out of nowhere. I mean, I don't know.
That's what we do on the show. That's what we do on the show.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I love it. And it's, you know, I
like
I
to
have
explore
a
the soul.
I believe you know with. Be who you are. And, Michael, that was a you question all the way, baby.
Well, why right. even mask it, Michael? Why didn't you just come right out and say, do you like me?
No. Right. No.
I need a hug.
First of all, I didn't say, was I good? I said, do you ever sit there and say to whoever you're watching here, that's my guy?
It's my guy. You're like, it's like Sally Fields. You like me. You really like me.
I don't care if you like me. I just wanted to know if you're my guy. That's all.
A lie has never been told as crystal clear
Michael,
as that.
There's an old saying that a lot of people say, like, when the bleep goes sideways and it looks like everything's going downhill and there's a tiny little rescue vehicle, you say to the guy that you really like, you know what, guy? If this goes the way I think it is, you're in the boat with me. Michael, you're in the boat.
Beautiful, beautiful. If you were Trevor Lawrence's parents and they push the football to the fall, do you have him play? No, not the fall, the spring.
Spring. Yeah, it would have to be a really shortened season. And I Trevor Lawrence is going, I'm trying to find a scenario, especially now that Justin Fields isn't going to play for Ohio State, where he wouldn't be the number one overall pick or specifically the number one quarterback taken in the draft.
Right.
I mean, I feel like it's pretty secure. And we talked about that with Tua last year. And the only reason he wasn't is because he got hurt. You know, I still think Tua, had he not gotten hurt, even though the season Joe had, would have probably been the number one overall picking the draft. So I would have to come up with a really convincing reason if I'm the Lawrence family to play in this scenario if the ACC does not go in the fall.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to play because he can't improve. He can only hurt himself if he hurts himself.
I agree. And you know, we've seen a couple of top prospects already say, look, you know, this year is not for me because of a variety of reasons. I'm going to prepare for the next thing.
God, how crazy is that going to be? What's going to happen to college basketball then if they move everything to the spring? Because you can't play college.
Don, I have to interrupt. No Aaron Judge in the Yankee lineup tonight.
Wow.
So something is going on then.
Right, that wasn't just a rest then.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, Don, to your question, you know, when I was having those conversations with some of the Big 12 guys, they were like, look, if we don't play football, we can't even think about other sports. One thing I've heard, and I think the NCAA is pushing this, is they want the college basketball season to be pushed back to late December, January, start conference play only. And let's be clear, the NCAA cannot afford, I mean literally cannot afford, to not have the tournament played for a second straight year.
Right.
They didn't play it this year, and they need the NCAA at the organization. That's where they make all their money, on that college basketball tournament. So they will do whatever, much in the same way I told you guys a month ago that the NFL is going to do whatever it takes to get to September 10th, that first game between the Chiefs and the Texans.
Right.
The NCAA is going to do whatever they can to see if they can salvage that NCAA tournament, because not having that for two straight years would be a financial disaster.
Trey, you know we love you, right? So we have to say goodbye.
Oh. All right, love you guys. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.